Get off my world.
Get off my world.
Get off my world.
Hi, I'm Joshua.
I'm Pat.
And I'm Calvin.
And this is Get Off My World. We're three guys who love the classic Doctor Who series and, depending on the week and the episode, do our best to love the new series, too. We'll take you through five rounds, wrap it, and get to the bottom of what's great and the not so great about our favorite show. And today's mini-sode is focused on The Girl Who Died.
These are girls who died, died. These are girls who died, died.
We all came of age in the 80s. I know you can't see our faces, our worn, haggard faces, but that little riff there may give you a cue.
Sorry. No, go on.
This was written by Stephen Moffat and James Matheson. Hopefully I'm getting his name right. The guy who wrote The Mummy on the Orient Express and Flatline, I can tell you that much.
Both of which we kind of liked, if I'm remembering right.
I really liked Flatline, and I enjoyed Mummy.
Yeah, and Mummy, I think, was my pick for best episode of last season. So, you know, good.
Yeah, Flatline was my pick, so. Yeah.
Thumbs up all around for those episodes. We'll see how the thumbs go for this one. starting with round one, Temporal Grace, we like to start every minisode with something we liked about the episode in question. Pat?
Yeah, let me start, because what I was going to say earlier, I don't usually read reviews of episodes that we're going to talk about on the podcast, because I don't want to get other people's ideas in my head more than I can help it. But I did read a little bit about this one this week. And so for my Temporal Grace, I'm identifying and saying how much I appreciate what I thought was very good quality directing by the director, whose name is Ed Bazalgette, or Bazalgette. And I'm grateful for the review of this episode I read by Philip Sandifer of the TARDIS Eruditorium for telling me that that guy, the director, is the former guitarist in the group The Vapors, who did the song.
Oh, my God.
Turning Japanese, back when we were,
wow.
I don't know how old. So this is our 80s musical flashback. Touchstone episode, I guess. I don't know.
The Vapors, man. Oh.
Yes. Tony Javanese. There's a little bit of detail that I never would have known if I hadn't poked around the internet. But anyway, to get back to his current career, I thought that this episode was particularly well directed. It wasn't super flashy until the show off shot at the end with Maisie Williams and time kind of turning all around her. But I especially liked just a lot of the moody shots of Peter Capaldi. It showed off his angular face and his broodiness, and it was understated but appreciated, at least by me.
Excellent. Kelvin?
Okay, I have one of my little long-winded roundabout kind of things here, which will sound negative at first, but it isn't. The original choice, apparently, to play Odin was going to be Brian Blessed. I love Brian Blessed. I think he's amazing. Just a ball of fun and everything. However, I am kind of glad he had to back out, but I'm glad they cast the other guy. I had a feeling that had Brian Blessed played this part, it would have pushed the whole episode into a much more comic direction. And I actually think the balance of comedy and serious in the episode was pretty darn great.
But yeah. If Brian Blessed played it, we'd have to have a whole other episode explaining why this guy looks like King Urkonos, and it would be too much.
Well, what about you, Josh? Did you like anything about this episode?
Well, I'm going to go kind of anecdotal thing related to the episode that I really liked, which might give you a hint how I felt about this episode. But my favorite thing about this episode was watching it with my family. It's also my least favorite part of this episode, which I'll get to later. But my favorite part of watching it with my family was we watched the cold open, cut to the musical cue, and my son, Aaron, immediately said, I smell robot of Sherwood. Okay, then round two, Doctor in Distress, as we continue to observe the 12th Doctor's character and how it is progressing or not progressing. So, guys, what did you think of the 12th Doctor and or Peter Capaldi in this episode?
Here's my thing about the Doctor. I'm still unconvinced by his relationship with Clara, and that's not really the fault of either of the actors at all, and we can talk about Jenna Coleman by herself later on. But I don't know if you remember last year we talked in the Forest of the Night episode about the possibility of the Doctor having a bunch of school kids as companions, like, and wouldn't that be tremendous? Or at least I thought it would be tremendous. And as preposterous as the idea sounds, this episode is a good example of how much I like the Doctor when he's interacting. I like him interacting almost literally with anyone else except Clara. Because the relationship, it's not that it's completely unconvincing to me, but I don't really see it going anywhere, and I don't see anything left for it to explore. But I loved seeing the Doctor interact with Maisie Williams and the dingbats in the village. I liked all of those scenes tremendously, and I think it works well to have an actor of Peter Capaldi's character be able to play off more people than just one companion, if that makes sense.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
He's at his best when he has someone to sort of spark a little bit with. And the relationship with Clara has become, went from pointlessly caustic last season to just inert and boring in this season, where he is just sort of desperate for her attention and moping about her not eventually being there, doing all this foreshadowing of her departure, which now just seems dull because it is no longer anticipatory, because the shows in our modern day have blurred so much that between what we read about the show and what we're watching in the show, so that foreshadowing is not very ominous because we all know, yep, she's leaving. They have to do this. It's ticking a box. And we kind of had that last season because she threatened to leave.
I think it's gotten better now that they use Clara as sort of a deputy doctor who isn't, you know, necessarily as good at it as she thinks she is or whatever. Then having her sort of pair off with other people and the Doctor sort of going off with other people. And I think that's actually pretty good. I mean, I get kind of tired of the Doctor and his companion having to be, like, wedded at the hip all the time.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, and maybe we're saying the same thing, because I thought Jenna Coleman was very good in that scene with Odin. It's probably the kind of thing she can do in her sleep at this point, but, you know, well-written character stuff. It's a good mixture of plausible reasoning and pure bluff on her part.
Part of it is that boring is preferable to caustic to me, I guess, to put it in Josh's terms. So I like how the relationship stuff is a little more on the back burner now, I guess, instead of, like, you know, trying to warp the entire story around to make it all about the relationship or something.
But one thing about just the 12th Doctor in this one, it's connected to my temporal grace here, I will say the whole talking baby thing barely worked as a joke in the Matt Smith era, and I think Matt Smith pulled it off because he's adorable and his character and that actor. But to try to make it an actual dramatic thing in this episode, I mean, I think Capaldi did the only thing an actor could do in that role is to just play it as seriously as possible because you couldn't go any other way. But I was embarrassed to be watching it for him and with my family. And I'm like, I do a Doctor Who podcast about a show that does episodes where the main character dramatically translates baby and we're supposed to be moved. It was one of the most epic fails I can think of in New Who for me. And I know most people are embarrassed by a show that has inflatable pink snakes that you're supposed to take seriously. That I can do in my sleep. But dramatically, poetically translating baby twice, once, twice, and it was clearly meant to bring a tear to your eye, and I just... Whew, it was hard. That was a white knuckle for me.
Yeah. Josh, it's going to sound like a conversation I have with our friend Michael, the unaffiliated critic, but I can't disagree with anything that you just said, except that I somehow do. I began with exactly that feeling that this is the most embarrassing possible thing. And once I decided to go with it, then I just kind of worked my way into an acceptance of the sort of mythological poetry of it. I can't say that it's good, but it somehow worked on me. I don't know. Maybe I'm an old softy. Maybe I've grown more sentimental in the last week or two or something. I don't know. But yeah, you're not wrong, but I kind of liked it. What can I say?
Round three, friends and foes. I think we kind of already talked a lot about Clara. Do you have anything else to add, gentlemen?
Well, this might be better suited for the, what are we calling the direction we think the season is going segment?
I can't stop you. You can stay whatever you want.
Oh, okay. When a shielder does the illusion of the sea serpent, well, guess what I thought that was.
It's your sea serpent again, Calvin.
Okay, the Midgard serpent was a big part of Norse mythology. Maybe we're setting up a thing where the moon dragon is the source of the Midgard serpent legend, maybe? I don't know.
Why do you insist on turning this into something you're going to hate, theoretically?
New Who has had its ups and downs, but its downiest downs for me has always been like the finales, the season finale stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm not overly attuned to like possible threads that could lead to some great unraveling of everything. But yeah.
All right, let's put a pin in the moon dragon. I could make some more speculation about that, but we'll save that for the last round. The other foes in this one were kind of just there to get the plot moving. Calvin already mentioned Zeus. The drinking testosterone was surprisingly foul.
Well, I don't know if you've tried it, Josh, but it's okay.
It's okay.
A little lemongrass in there, you know.
Yeah, well, I agree with you, Josh. It could not have been more generic unless somebody had just written in generic Doctor Who villain race, right? The interesting things about them was that he was disguising himself as Odin, which was essentially a one-and-done plot element, and they didn't linger on it very much. And the kind of neat design of the warriors, although maybe I was being dumb. I didn't even realize that was armor. I thought they were robots for the entire thing until their helmets came off. That's just me not paying attention, I guess.
They needed to be sort of generic-y, war-mad kind of aliens, because there's no way it could have been one of the established Doctor Who races, like
the Suntaran.
It couldn't have been the Suntarans or something, yeah.
It was clearly a plot mechanic, and I think in the bigger picture of this episode that's fine.
Yeah, I don't think it's really what it's about. It needs an antagonist, and they serve that role pretty well to serve the Seven Samurai plot. Which by itself is only serving the Girl Who Died plot, but we'll get to that when we speculate about future episodes.
What about Maisie Williams?
She's the big person to talk about this. She's a big-name guest star, but she's only known for one other role, and that's Arya Stark. And I speculated last week that this was going to be kind of a cheap ripoff of Arya Stark, and I was pleasantly surprised. I don't think it is. She is great in this episode. She brings out a lot more vulnerability in Ishildur than you see in Arya Stark, although it may be an unfair comparison since she's had 5 seasons to develop that character and she only has a few minutes here in this episode. Still, I thought she was terrific. I really liked it. I am uncertain about how good she'll be in a very different kind of role, though. Maybe we can talk about this more later, but the coming next week thing where she's a highwayman person is... I don't know. I'm dubious. Still, for this episode, I thought she was terrific. And I also want to give a little shout-out to whoever the bald guy was who played her father, who I also thought was pretty terrific.
Yeah.
A lot of emotionality with a really small part.
Yeah, I thought Maisie Williams did a great job fleshing in that character. I thought it was pretty underwhelming and had a lot of telling instead of showing. She's supposed to be a storyteller and someone who didn't really fit in, yet everyone seemed to love her a lot, and her storytelling and that side of her that seemed so important in the last 5 minutes of the episode or 10 minutes seemed to just be introduced a couple minutes before the whole eel thing. yeah, I just thought it was a little clunky, a lot of her character stuff, and I think she was so appealing. I wish the script, I mean, like a lot of the new series scripts, is just like, take a deep breath if you want to have a story about this character that the doctor meets. Maybe you can trust that the viewers will be fine if you have a little less alien carnage or spaceships or something in a particular story. But maybe that's what we're saving for next week, to have more of an actual interaction between her and the doctor. We shall see.
And, you know, in the 21st century, where, as you say, we can't get away from the media environment surrounding Doctor Who, you don't watch this cold. You watch this, most of the people do anyway, knowing that this is the person who plays Arya Stark, and they have some kind of vague idea of who she is and the kind of person that she's probably going to play. And so we have all of those connotations that go into her performance even before she says a word, right? So it falls down, I think, on the pure plot level. She's a storyteller. She's a puppeteer. Those are kind of things that are like, what? They could have introduced those things earlier, but as far as what we're supposed to feel about the character and the broad type of character it is, don't need to do any work at all. We already know that before the show even starts.
Calvin, any thoughts on any other friends, foes?
I know the doctor's met Vikings at some other point, but I can't think
Time Meddler.
Time Meddler.
Time Meddler, yes, Time Meddler, duh.
They wore stupid horns on their helmets back then, too. Even though that's
they didn't actually do, but anyway.
Impossible, yeah. That's another thing we can blame Richard Wagner for.
All right, round four, the big picture, in which we will talk about the story as a whole. I had a difficult time with this one. I know I mentioned my son saying I smell Robot of Sherwood, and I will say I don't put it in the same category as that, because Robot of Sherwood was, you know, ill-conceived and then underperformed, whereas I think this one is fairly well-conceived and it strives for things. I just think it happens to miss a lot of what it's striving for, but I would still rather watch an episode that strives for something a little interesting or unique and is somewhat well-conceived that still fails for me than something that Robot of Sherwood.
Yeah, you know, this is not anywhere near as bad as Robot of Sherwood. That was terrible. Terrible, terrible. This I liked, generally speaking. The comedy was far too broad for my taste. And as you say, some of the characters were underdeveloped, and we can disagree with things about, like, talking to the babies and stuff. But it's got quite a number of very good lines in it. You know, what's the one thing the gods never do? Gods never actually show up. I thought that was terrific. I liked the directing a lot, and I thought all the acting was fairly strong. And for what it is, it's a very unpretentious sort of thing. It's just, you know, the doctor doing Seven Samurai and resolving things in a particularly kind of goofy Doctor Who way with magnets and eels and stuff like that. The only thing I didn't like so much about it was that it really was all in service of not itself, right? These were plot things that were only to get us to a point where the doctor would make Isildur an immortal person, who we're going to see at least in the next episode and probably more as the season goes on, I have to assume. So in a way, every single thing that happened was only so that she would die and that the doctor would make the choice to make her immortal, which I think is a very interesting choice, but it kind of makes the entire thing just sort of a prelude, right? It doesn't have any depth to it itself. It's only leading into that one decision, which is going to...
It's a prelude, yeah.
Yeah, we assume it's going to pay off later. Okay.
Not only that, so, it's also just there to set up where did I get this face? I mean, the whole reason it's a village, it's under attack, and he has the whole dilemma about he can't save people and all his talks about rules of the time, it's all there to echo the fires of Pompeii so he can have that revelation at the end. I don't think they added that on because they went, oh, I think the story was conceived to explain the fact that Peter Capaldi appeared earlier and to set up this other story they want for part two. So it all felt like it was in service of previously existing issues or problems or of another story they wanted to tell.
Yeah, that is puzzling the first time you hear him talk to Clara about, we got to tread lightly in time, we can't make these tidal waves or whatever. It's like, well, what have you been doing for 50 years except exactly this sort of thing? We're just going to jump in and we're going to save this village. It's perfectly legitimate questions for a time traveler to ask, but seems like his entire modus operandi up to this point has been doing the complete different sort of thing. The Pompeii thing at least had a... it had an internal rationale that it was such a historically significant moment that it was something that should not ever be interfered with. And here this nowhere village somewhere Scandinavia in the Middle Ages, it doesn't have the same kind of weight. So it did seem like he was kind of bloviating out of place.
I will say this, though, they did give one good narrative plot point for that when he explained that if he defeated these guys, it would make the entire Earth a target. So it was less about timey-wimey as, like, putting, again, the lives on a scale. It saved these villagers or draw a lot of attention and have the whole planet in danger.
And they had set that up thematically in the cold open where he was explaining to Clara that, yes, we've defeated this one particular alien race. Won't they come back? Yes, but this time they'll be prepared. And so here we've got a situation where there's no way that these Vikings, that the Earth could be prepared for another invasion of this type. So, yes, it does make sense. It's just, I don't know, maybe because it triggers off such a fundamental thing about Doctor Who that we don't ask those sorts of questions because the Doctor just should be able to help people that to bring it up so explicitly, and in reference to another episode that brought it up so explicitly seems weirdly weighty and out of place for what's otherwise a very light episode.
Yeah, part of the thing that bothered me where I think it reached for things and didn't quite achieve them is, I think you mentioned it, I felt the comedy was sort of predictable and flat, and I say that the new series can do, I think, really funny character comedy, and has. I think something like The Caretaker made me laugh all the way through from last season, whereas this was sort of very broad, exactly what you expected. Okay, he's going to train these guys, and they're all going to be lame, and there was no surprise there. Some anticipation is good, but it was just they give them funny names. Yep, they suck. Oh, they lit the village on fire, and it didn't. I don't know. It was very predictable.
I don't know. I don't have the weird doubts and prevarications you guys have. I really like this. The thing that bugged me is not anywhere near the things that bug you. The one thing that almost wrecked the episode for me, electric eels don't live in Scandinavia. They're from the Amazon. They're a freshwater, tropical environment fish. There is no reason Vikings would have barrels of them. Why would they collect barrels of electric eels? What possible use for them? You know, you, even if there were somehow electric eels in Scandinavia, you wouldn't be able to make lutefisk out of them. They're not edible. They're not, you know, why would they have barrels of electric eels?
Anyway. Kevin, you're just not understanding. They're the larval stage of the moon serpent.
I otherwise really liked the episode. After it was done, I was almost like writing fan fiction in my head where like the sixth doctor or someone like somehow gets an electric eel population in Scandinavia.
And while you're at it, can you explain why they're actually wearing horns on their helmets? That would be fine too.
You know, maybe it was a little arch, the differences between the comedy and the seriousness or something, but I thought it was really well balanced that way. I don't know.
You know, Doctor Who is generally, a little kooky, and they're not always grounded in reality. But this had this quality of my wife describes this in some science fiction as, and then this happens, and then this happens, and then this, like a kid writing a story. And this episode just had that to the max. You know, it's like, and then aliens show up, and they pretend to be gods, and then they have eels, and then a baby talks, and then, you know, the eels particularly, it's a great setup in the modern series to trap the Doctor away from the TARDIS. He doesn't have any sonic device. He's got nothing. And
right,
to have him
right.
actually have to ruminate on that, it would have been great if they came up with a real clever idea based in the reality of the situation, even the full reality of Vikings with horns. But the electric eels, again, that was just like, I'm afraid people aren't irritated enough by baby talk. Let's throw random electric eels in here. So we got to rate this.
Yeah, Josh, you have successfully harshed my buzz on this episode. I was prepared to give it a higher score, but your relentless negativity has eroded my confidence in the episode. So I'm going to give it maybe a more considered rating than I was originally going to. So let's call it 3.5 babies and a vial of testosterone.
Poor half baby.
Well, I want to give it 4.5, whatever the hex. But the electric eel thing is just bugging me, so I'm going to give it 3.5 covers of yakety sax.
We did not mention Benny Hill, in all fairness.
And we should. We should mention Benny Hill continuously.
Benny Hill is a canonical part of the Doctor Who universe.
Yes.
I give it 2.5 electric eels, talking babies, and whatever bit of nonsense. And the half there is just for Benny Hill. Round 5, wild speculation. All right, we've already touched on a serpent theme, and I definitely think the season with the snake guy in the first episode and the mural, and now we have electric eels, and we have the hallucination of the serpent attacking the aliens in this episode. There is arguably some sort of, at the very least, motif, if not foreshadowing of some event, and maybe, just maybe, it will be the moon dragon. As far as next episode goes, I honestly have no idea what they're going to do with it. I think it looks promising, and I looking at the trailer, I didn't even see Clara in it anywhere. I wonder if they're going to sideline her and have a Clara Light episode. It seems all to be the Doctor and Maisie Williams, which I think would be refreshing from my point of view. So, and we also get another mention of Hybrid. Is right.
Yeah, anything related to a prophecy is nonsense as far as I'm concerned. I do not care about this Hybrid plot in any way whatsoever. So.
Minus the prophecy, a Hybrid are usually quite dull as well.
Bring back Dalek Sack. That's all I got to say.
I hope so. No, I don't.
Yep. Well, as far as wild, uninformed speculation, the only thing I have to say, I mentioned it before, I don't think we'll have seen the end of Maisie Williams even after the next episode, whatever sort of highwayman business they've got going on with her. I think she'll probably be a recurring part of this season. That's my completely uninformed speculation. She'll probably be a part of the season closer. There's going to be a Hybrid thing. Maybe we get Davros back, and, you know, there's a big fight with the Moon Dragon, and Alan Moore likes it, and I get to have a guest role. And, you know, then I finally get to meet Nicola Bryant. Oh, I'm sorry. Are we still recording?
Yes. Oh, we are. All right. We have no idea where it's going. We know a little bit more about past elaborate fantasy life. So until next week, I'm Joshua.
I'm Pat.
And I'm Kelvin.
And we're saying, get off my
world.